Hi, this is Jean-Jacques Taylor, and you're listening to Jock Talk. This is a podcast where I talk about the Cowboys, the team I've covered as a beat writer, columnist, TV insider, and radio host for 28 years. I'll also talk about the NFL and the things I love, working out, streaming, food, and all things Dallas. My boy Big Joe and the Big Rig, one of my oldest friends, produces the show and occasionally chimes in with his thoughts on the Cowboys. After all, he's a lifelong Cowboys fan, and he played high school, college, and semi-pro football. Welcome to Jock Talk, where sports is fluid. What's true today might not be true an hour, a day, or a month from now. I'm going to give you the truth straight. No chaser. Glad to have you aboard. Let's get it.
Welcome to episode 77 of Jock Talk. I'm Jean-Jacques Taylor, joined by my boy Big Joe and the Big Rig for episode 77. What up, dog?
What's up?
77, man. Who is that?
Bruce Thornton.
Damn, that man said Bruce Thornton.
Well, you got Elvin Bethea, 76. 77, Bruce Thornton. 78, John Dutton. 79, Harvey Martin. See, I'm telling you, I looked at that damn McDonald's poster most of my childhood, and I was just like, boom, boom, boom. My brother used to say, I just closed my eyes, and my brother said, whose number this, and whose number that, and whose number that? So that's kind of stuck on me. But, you know, obviously, Big 77 is my man, Tyron Smith.
Right, man of the hour. We're going to get into him today. Along with some stuff that Jerry Jones said at the Combine, some Dak conversation. Always got to be some Dak conversation. And then we're going back down memory lane for a minute because I hung out with some high school friends the other day by accident. But turned into a 3 or 4 hour lie fest, which was always good. And I say lies in the funniest way, but we remember some things that happened back to our childhood. So without further ado, I always like to remind y'all, if you're ever involved in a car accident or there's some other negligence, it could be medical malpractice or you're at a friend's house and get hurt, or you're at a corporation or business and get hurt. If somebody else's negligence has caused you some pain and injury, what you need to do real quick is pick up the phone, dial 972-934-8900 and talk to Greeny Law. All you have to do is say, hey, here's the situation that I was in. Here's the details. Here's the circumstances. What do you think? They bring you on as a client. It's been a heck of a day for you. Real talk. Because of this, they want you to focus on two things: healing and renewal. Get your mind right. Get your body right. Get your life back. That's really what they want you focused on. They want 100% of your attention focused on that. So what do? They handle all the other stuff. You need a doctor's appointment. They handle that for you. They'll set it up. Real talk. You need to go see a specialist. They'll find a specialist. They'll set that up for you. Real talk. They do all of that stuff, man. All the paperwork, they handle it. Any conversations, they handle it. They walk you through the process, which can be long and tedious and scary. All that kind of stuff, intimidating. They handle that stuff, though, so you can focus on what? You heard me. Healing and renewal. Get your mind right, get your body right, get your life back. It's really that simple. Now, you could say, yeah, but where am I on that priority list? I'm just me, a little old person. Nah, it don't work like that. See, they don't get paid unless you get paid. Real talk. So, it behooves them, and you are their number one priority. Everybody that they bring on as a client is their top priority because they don't get paid unless you get paid. I like to tell y'all, real talk, you don't have to take my word for nothing. Go to the website, GreenLaw.com. See all the awards that they've won. You can't make this stuff up. Just look at the awards that they've won. All right? Look at the comments from people that they've helped. And then ask yourself, do I want them to take care of me? The answer is hell yeah. It's really that simple. 972-934-8900 is the number. Jerry Jones, oftentimes public enemy number one. How you feel about Jerry Jones, though?
I don't know, man. I've learned so much talking to you, Clarence Todd, you know, some of the insiders about Jerry. I used to be one of them people that blamed Jerry for a lot of stuff. He still gets the blame, but he don't get all of it. You know, I think overall the problem with what's going on over there is the way he runs things sometimes. You know, how we talked about coaches that need a job when they come to Jerry.
Right.
Jerry got the upper hand.
Right.
So, you know, I'm kind of 60-40 on the problem is him and the problem is who he got working for him. And the reasons they come together. And that's what I've learned from talking to y'all.
Well, we are the only show that has damn near 80 years of combined experience covering the Cowboys. I think you'd be real talk hard-pressed to find any show that has more people on a regular basis talking about the Cowboys with more experience than me, Clancy Hill Jr., the longest tenured beat writer in DFW. Been covering the Cowboys since 1997. Archie's been covering them since 2003 when Bill Parcells showed up, and I've been covering them since 1995. Every coach except Jimmy Johnson and Tom Landry I've covered. Now, that being said, Jerry spoke from the combine, and it's always curious to hear what Jerry has to say because ultimately Jerry's running things. Now, he don't run it with an iron fist and he don't make the final decisions. I mean, maybe he makes the final decision, but he makes a decision in conjunction with Steven, Mike McCarthy, and Will McClay. And so that's why it's always tricky. And the Cowboys have been handling their business like this probably for real like this since Jason Garrett showed up. I'm not sure they did it quite like this when Wade Phillips, I can't remember, I had to go look it up. But definitely since Jason showed up, it's been more of a committee thing. And so when you say, well, you know, I mean, it's just so it's hard to put the blame on one person because a lot of times they do a committee thing. They sit around, they discuss it. Like the draft board is a committee-based draft board. They put the board together. If there's a dispute about whether Big Joe should be the fourth-ranked defensive tackle or the fifth-ranked defensive tackle, Will McClay, the coach, and whoever scouted him will go into the film room and look at the film until they decide. Okay, Big Joe's going to get a 4.2, which is going to make him the fourth highest defensive tackle on the board. That's how they do it. So it's not like it's this guy or that guy. Now, the difference is Will McClay is good at putting the board together and helping come to the consensus so that they make good picks in the draft. Now, that being said, Jerry spoke at the combine. And, you know, there's been a couple themes in the offseason, Doc. Number one theme is, you know, Jerry says, hey, we're all in, and everybody's got their own interpretation of that. Then there's been a lot of talk about what's going on with Dak and his contract. And then there's been some conversation about the culture of the Cowboys. Well, Jerry touched on all those things, and we're finna take a deep dive on them. And so here's what your owner, Jerry Jones, had to say about what all in means to him.
Your definition of what is all in and mine might not be the same thing. But I'm trying to win the games this year with my decision.
I guess you heard that.
Versus what? You wasn't trying last year? What are you talking about? What exactly? Well, I mean, let me tell you, like, what exactly is he trying to say? You know,
he's trying to say, I believe, that there are times when you play in poker where you go, whether I like the cards, I don't like the cards, no matter what I think the other people are doing, I'm pushing all my chips to the center of the table in this hand, and I'm trying to take this whole pot home right now. So I believe, now I don't think you do that with every hand and every year for a variety of different reasons. You try to win every hand, but you don't go all in on every hand. So I think that's what he said. Now he also said, my definition could vary from your definition. Okay. But when we're talking about going all in, and you tell me what you think after I break this down. The news that came out of Combine yesterday is that it looks like Tyron Smith will not play in Dallas next year. And here's what I thought about that. This is a young man's game. NFL is not for old people. It's a young man's game. A younger player is almost always trying to take an older player's job. It's a young man's game. Old players get hurt more often, tend to take longer to get back on the field. Tyron Smith has missed 30 of the last 64 Cowboys regular season games. In the last 4 years, he's played 2, 11, 4, and 13 games. So, if the Cowboys decided that, hey, we're going to move on from you because we don't think you can stay healthy, it's time to get younger at left tackle, I'm all right with that. I really am. It's a young man's game. if they moved on because they said they're tired. You've been here 13 years. Come on, dog. Give us a little bit of a hometown discount, a little bit of a bargain, and play for, you know, $10 million a year. Then I'm like, y'all some dumbasses. Does that make sense to you, bro?
That they dumbasses? If they do that, yeah, it makes sense.
Because you either want the dude or you don't want him.
Yeah, you want him. Yeah, you want him or you don't. Because who you gonna get?
Well, that's an interesting question. And the reason I don't really like the move, based on what I know right now, I mean, I understand it, but I don't really like it. And here's why: if we take into account the Tyron's missed 3 games each of the last 8 years, that's a long time now, and if he's missed at least 4 each of the last 4 years. He turned 33 in December, which for an offensive lineman is not really that old, but he came in the league at 20. It's been a lot of miles on his body. But when he was the highest rated left tackle, according to Pro Football Focus, whatever you, however you think about their grading system, he was the highest rated left tackle. You know, the problem to me is if you don't re-sign him, then you have to find a left tackle. Picking at 24, I don't know that you can find a left tackle and you go, oh, we plug this guy in and we don't think about him at all. You might be able to do that with a top 10 left tackle. But typically, left tackles are elite players in the league today. Look at how much they get paid.
Well, you're gonna do what we've been saying they ain't going to do. All right. Two things that they – one thing they probably going to have to do is another thing they don't need to do. Don't put Terrence Steele over there at left tackle. That boy's a turnstile over there. He had a bad year at right tackle because his knee was bad. But before that, he was pretty good right tackle. But if you remember Terrence playing at left tackle, he was awful.
No, I zapped that from my memory.
Yeah, he was terrible. Now, if you kick Tyler out and you draft a guard, that's what we've been saying they don't want to do. But would you rather have a rookie left tackle or would you rather put Tyler out there? You know, somebody got to take 77's place.
You raised the point, and that's what I would do. I would move Tyler Smith to left tackle. That's what I would do. That's what you drafted him to be. He's been an all-pro caliber guard. He should be an elite left tackle, based on what we know and a little bit that we've seen. And then you can either sign a veteran guard or you can draft a guard and go play. But you can find veteran guards who are serviceable everywhere. They don't require a whole lot of money. Guard is the least highest paid position on the offensive line. They're just not valued very much because you can find them everywhere. And so, yeah, you want an elite guy if you can get one. But if you can't, lots of teams play football with plug-and-play guards. Lots of teams play with plug-and-play guards. You can't even name more than a handful of guards in the league. Know what I mean? Most people can't.
I was going to say most people can't.
Most people can't.
Yeah, I can't.
Because they're just not valued very high, and you can judge it based on how much money they make. It's that simple. So I would want to move Tyler Smith out there because of this, for me. Or I would go in thinking I'm okay if I have to move him. The Cowboys, to me, have shown beyond a shadow of a doubt that they are much better when they just go take the best player available. Every time it seems that they draft a need, they end up reaching, which is how it often is.
When is the last time that these guys – I remember – drafting for need in the lower rounds when they drafted, I ain't gonna say his name, Cheeto, and your boy from Michigan, Lewis, and somebody else. They drafted all those guys, all those DBs at one time, and I thought that was pretty good right there.
They drafted for need last year.
Yeah. They drafted linebackers last year. They drafted Overshawn.
Yeah. But typically, when they just go say, hey, let's go take the best player available. It works. And for me, this is just your boy here. You can never, ever go wrong drafting the best player available because the best player available can help you. some way, shape, or form, the best player available will help your team because that person typically can fill a role. He can play somewhere. When you start drafting for need and you start reaching, you end up screwing up your draft a lot of times because you overdraft a guy. Like, if you draft a guy in the first round when you really should have took him in the second, then you wonder why he ain't performing at a certain level. Or vice versa. Or you take him in the second when you should have took him in the third. It's just most of the time when you're like, we need a guy to fill this spot, it just does not work out for you. Now, it can work out for you if you're drafting at the top of the draft where you're dealing with the best players. But when you're drafting where the Cowboys are, there's no need to reach for the fifth best tackle in the draft if you could get, I don't know, pick a guy. The second best defensive tackle, the third best wide receiver, the second best receiver, whatever, man. I just don't like drafting for need when the best player available to me typically works out better for you because you find a guy who you can do something with. That's just one man's opinion. We'll see what they do. But Jerry says that they were all in. And that brings to light the question of what do you do at quarterback, man? They didn't meet with Todd France. I don't know that that's such a big deal at the combine this week. But I was reading something where
Todd France being Dak's agent?
Yeah.
All right.
Now, here's what, you know, and I think you have to go back and really understand the negotiations with Dak to understand why they're at this point. Don't forget, they franchised Dak back-to-back seasons. All right? Instead of signing them to a long-term deal, they franchised him. And the thing that that did was, why did they franchise him instead of giving him a back-to-back, instead of giving him a long-term deal? Number one, they couldn't reach an agreement. Number two, in their mind, they weren't sure how good Dak was. And that's fair. That's okay. But once you went down that road, what did you show to Dak, Doc? It's all business. It's not personal. It's what? It's business.
It's like they pushed him into the big money by franchising him. You see what I'm saying?
If they'd have
extended him when Carson Wentz and everybody in his class got extended, he would. You know, they'd have had him locked up pretty good. But they pushed him by franchising him like that. They pushed him. You know, they pushed him forward where they had to pay him because everybody else was getting big money, so he had to get big money.
Right. And now here's the other thing. You know, it's they also showed him that it's business. Like, we don't believe in you 100%, so we're not giving you that deal. Here's one thing you must understand about the Cowboys. I've been a critic of this approach forever when it comes to them. The Cowboys believe that they're supposed to win every single effing deal. Like, literally, they don't believe in win-win. I had somebody approach me last week about the JJT Media Group doing a project for them. And I told this person, hey, I like that idea. Let's get a deal done. Give me a price point because I want it to be a win-win situation. I want you to feel good about the money you're spending, and then I want to feel good about the time that I'm going to spend on this project and the money I'm getting for it. I said, so I'm not trying to beat you over the head. Let's make it a win-win deal. We spent a couple of days going back and forth. At the end, it was a win-win deal. Cowboys don't believe in that. Hey, dog, you know why they don't believe in that? I'm going to give you one guess. Why you think they don't believe in that?
I don't know. Go ahead.
Here's for real, dog. Here's why. Every other deal that they deal with, every other business, they kick their ass. You know what I mean? Like, you come to the Cowboys and say, hey, I want to be the official podcast of the Cowboys. They're going to turn you over and beat you on the backside. Anytime you want to partner with them, they go, we're the Dallas Cowboys. We're the most recognizable brand in the world. We're going to win this deal, and ain't nothing you can say about it. And you know what people say? We want to be aligned with the Cowboys so badly, bend us over and take what you want. So they're used to winning because they win every other deal that they've made. Hey, man, you want space at the star? You want to put your business in the star? It don't matter that, I'm just using a hypothetical. It doesn't matter that every other business is charging you $30 a square foot for their business. We're going to charge you $70 a square foot so that you can be in the Star and your clients can say, hey, I had a meeting with so-and-so business at the Star. That adds to your cachet, so you need to pay for that cachet. And you know what? People line up to do it. So what I'm telling you is they are used to winning every deal. So I understand why they think they should win every deal. But Dak ain't like that. And Dak has them now over barrel. And he's not taking anything less than what he deserves. I mean, he's just not. We've seen that. And you know why? Because what did the Cowboys show him first? It's all business. That's why they put him on the franchise tag. We don't believe in you. So it's business. It's not personal, Dak. I mean, we're paying you a lot of money. But we're not giving you that long-term deal yet because we don't believe in you yet. So it was all business then. And so from Dak's perspective, it ain't personal, Jerry. It's just business. That's why I don't even talk to you. I let my agent, Todd Franz, handle everything. So now that with the backdrop, here's what your boy Jerry had to say about signing Dak to a long-term deal.
We don't need to, but we can if everybody wants to solve it. You can. And so the how is you get in and get on the same page and see if you can come to an agreement. If you can't, what we have in place works. And so obviously, if you do it one way, then that gives you, you'll be working through some of the other areas on the team in a different way. But you can't really plan on that until you see where you are there. That's what we're doing.
Is there fear that this could be his last year? Do you have that fear at all? That
I don't fear. No, I don't fear that.
Now you hear that and think what, bro?
He's not sure what he want to do with Dak. I mean, it sound like they might let him get up out of here. To me.
Yeah. So here are their options. You can keep him as he is currently constructed on the roster at $59 million against the cap next year. That's a big number, but you can handle it. You can restructure some other folks if you want to create some more salary cap room. All right. You can restructure his deal and make him count, I think it's $41 million, and use that extra $18 million to get some business done. If you do that and he leaves after the season, it will increase his cap hit next year, even though he's not here. So that's not really a desired effect. Or you can re-sign him to an extension, which will significantly lower his cap figure, and tie you to him for another probably 4 years. Or you can say, we're going to let him play out this season and then sign him at the end of the year, you know, if he takes us to the NFC Championship game or the Super Bowl. Let me tell you something. Let me be very clear. If you do not sign Dak to an extension, you're not going to sign him as a free agent. It's not going to happen. And here's why. If you get to the point where you're established, you've been in the league since 2016. You now have a chance to experience true free agency where any team can bid on you. You're not finna re-sign with the Cowboys. You'd be like, well, nah, Jacques, if you go to the championship game or Super Bowl, you'd be like, nah, but this is a great team. I'm going to come back. Nah, man, because it's business. And if you take the Cowboys to the championship game or the Super Bowl, what would your price tag be, Coach Harfield?
Astronomical. Out of this world.
What would your price tag be, dog?
Cowboys going to have to come off it.
Dog, you know? What would your price tag be? It'd be $62 million a year, some ridiculous number like that. But guess what? You're a free agent. You got everybody bidding on you. Man, please. It's a number that when y'all would see it, you would pass out because you'd be like, oh, my God, there's no way in the world I thought Dak Prescott could ever get a number like that. I'm telling you, he can and he will. So the bottom line is this. You really got to come to grips with. Now, I know a lot of y'all will be like, yeah, it's whatever, man. Dak can go if he want to. Holla. And that's cool if you think that way.
We'd have to put together a group of teams that we think would go after him. Because some of those guys got a quarterback in place, and some of them got a young guy they drafted, you know, and some of them just ain't Super Bowl ready to be paying him that much money.
Right.
So I was just wondering, it's probably just probably about five teams, maybe, would pay him that money.
Yeah, but that's, you know, when in negotiations, we all know, first off, it don't take but one to want to pay you. But two is great. Five, they're not allowed them between 5 and 20. Because, now, you know, it's hard to look into the future and see, because you don't know, number one, what quarterbacks are going, where the quarterbacks are going and getting situated in draft now and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if he were a free agent right now, today, totally free, you could say Washington might want him, or, you know, him or the rookie. I mean, but I don't know. It's hard to say, but it's a lot of teams out there. There's enough teams out there that need quarterbacks. What about Minnesota? We can plug and play him.
So you do the same thing they quarterback doing now.
Yeah, but, you know, it's all in the eye of the beholder.
It is.
And so, you know, it only takes one. You know, maybe New Orleans, maybe Atlanta.
Okay. Okay. You know. I can see Atlanta being sexy.
Yeah, maybe the Raiders. Tennessee need a quarterback. Well, unless you think Will Levis is a guy, maybe you do. But I don't know. There's New England needs a quarterback.
Nope.
The Jets may need one after Aaron Rodgers. Who's 40 years old. Maybe this is last year coming up. I don't know. Pittsburgh needs a quarterback. So there's enough teams out there off the top of our heads, let alone if he was really available, that teams would go after Dak Prescott. So there's not going to be a problem for him establishing a market and all of that stuff. It's just a matter of ultimately where he ends up going. So that's the news out of there. That there's been, Jerry doesn't seem to be afraid, but, you know, Jerry know how to strike a deal, and Jerry knows how to create the appearance that he don't give a damn.
I was gonna say Jerry know how to bluff. Yeah, you know how to do that most definitely.
Yeah, exactly. So just because he say it, don't make it so. I still think that they would prefer to get a deal done and have that certainty at quarterback. Because, as I've told you guys many, 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 many times, it is hard to find a top 12 quarterback consistently year in, year out in the draft. It's the hardest position in professional sports, I think. We've seen evidence over the years. It doesn't matter where you take them. First pick, top 5 pick, top 10 pick. There's no guarantee of success. We have numerous years of teams that numerous teams have gone 10, 20 years without what we would call a franchise quarterback. Has it been a solid starter? Maybe so. Has it been a capable guy? Maybe so. Has it been that guy who you think gives you a legitimate chance to win? No. So, you can let him go and it's cool. You just have to understand, with open eyes, maybe we get a guy in 4 or 5 years, like we found Romo after Roy left, Troy Aikman left, or maybe it's more like the Buffalo Bills. Maybe you got to wait 20 years between Jim Kelly and Josh Allen.
Well, you know? The question for me is, if you let him go, will Mike McCarthy get a chance to groom another quarterback? He's been good at that. Will he get a chance to do that? Do he know what he wants? He can pick a guy to groom him.
That's a good question.
Will he get a chance to do that?
Well, let's go down that road. I don't mind taking that exit ramp while we're looking for some hot Funyuns at the gas station.
Funyuns don't come in no hot flavor.
Yeah, they do.
Do they?
Yeah.
Man, I eat more junk than you do. How do you know that?
Because my ex used to eat them all the time.
Oh, hot ones. Okay.
Hot Funyuns, baby.
All right.
That was a specialty. I once brought her back by 6 bags because I found them at the store. And I was like, I ain't seen none of these at the neighborhood store. So let me just grab them all right now.
Right.
Put them in my trunk and parcel them out a bag at a time. What do you think about Trey? See, I don't know that he's ever going to get a chance. Well, I take it back. You know when he's going to get his chance to show what he can do? Next preseason.
Or when somebody get hurt.
Well, that's going to come after the preseason.
Yeah.
I would be shocked if, like, this is what I believe. I don't know this for a fact. This is what I believe. I believe they're going to tell Cooper Rush, hey, Doc, we know exactly what you can do. Dak ain't going to play. So we're going to give you, Cooper, you know, one or two series and the rest of the game. We give him to Trey Lance, and we give whoever third-string quarterback, I mean, whoever the other fourth quarterback is, we'll give him some garbage time snaps at the end, maybe one series at the end of the game. And then one game, we're going to start Trey from start to finish and let him see what he do. And the goal at the end of the preseason is to have Trey Lance, just pick a number, have 100 pass attempts in the preseason.
Well, whenever I hear somebody started 13 games in college or 18 games in college, it's not enough intangibles that go into their game to make them a good quarterback a lot of times. But then who are we talking about? When is Trey going to get his chance? When is he going to get his reps in practice? When is he going to – you see what I'm saying? I know what you're saying. I'm just saying it's crazy because when Mitchell Trubisky was drafted, I said the same thing. When Trey was drafted, I said the same thing. I said that about Anthony Richardson for the Colts, but the Colts knew what they was doing with him, and he looked pretty good. So, right. You know, they kind of had a plan for that.
Yeah, they had a real starter that they could use. Now, they finally put him in pretty early, but still, you know, and they had a plan for him. I think that's the key, a real plan.
I have a plan.
He showed that he was capable of handling whatever plan that they had for him.
Yep. Surprised me. Yeah, he's pretty good.
Surprised a lot of people, I think, because I don't think their plan was the plan, but I think he was. And here's what happens, and this is very important. He showed them enough in practice that they were like, you know what? I think he's good to go.
Let's get him. Yep.
And what have I told y'all? Tony Romo. I once wrote an oral history on Tony Romo. It's a really good read, even 7 years after I did it. You can find, if you just Google Tony Romo oral history, it'll pop up. And I went from the start of his career until the end of his career. And I talked to about 30 people about his career. And at one point, matter of fact, you should read it, dog. You'll find it interesting. At one point, Darren Woodson said, I pulled Romo aside and told him, you may be the third quarterback on the roster. You're the best quarterback on the team. Keep grinding. The point of that story is when other players – know that the backup can play or the third string guy can play, it come up in conversation like, dog, you should have seen your boy at practice the other day, man. He sliced and diced us up. Or, dog, you should have seen this play, man. He did this and he did that, boo, 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 boo. And I was like, wow, I never seen nothing like that. Like Clint Sterner, y'all remember him?
Yeah.
He was telling me a story.
From Arkansas.
He said, I didn't pay no attention to Romo. I figured I had the third job. And then Romo dropped back, looked right, and I was like, where the hell is he looking? And then all of a sudden, he threw a dart across the middle on like a skinny post for like a 20-yard gain to somebody. And I was like, oh, I need to go tell my wife we're not going to be here this year. He said, because when he made that throw, I was like, I can't do nothing like that. He going to get this job. And so no one has heard those stories about Trey Lance is what I'm saying. Maybe they'll come this summer. Maybe they'll come this offseason. But until you start hearing those stories, you're like, yeah, he's not really doing anything in practice. And maybe it's a lack of reps. But, you know, he should be running the scout team next year, which is where he should have an opportunity to do those types of things. So Trey Lance, I think he's going to get his opportunity in the preseason and in training camp to really, really show what he can do. Like, They should want him to beat out Cooper Rush. They should give him every opportunity to beat out Cooper Rush. And then if he can't, that will tell us something significant.
We'll see. We will see.
The other topic that's been bandied about quite a bit during this offseason already has been, what's up with Cowboys culture? I mean, you got CeeDee Lamb's mom talking about Dak. You got Dak's brother talking about the fan. You got Micah's brother talking about the defense and Dan Quinn. Here's what your owner, one Jerry Jones, had to say about the Cowboys culture.
When I look at our team, we need to be able to stop the run better, and we need to be able to run the ball better. If that's culture, then we got a problem.
But you don't see a sense of entitlement or anything like that? With
No. No. With players?
Yes, with players.
No, not at all. Our players that many deserve to feel good about themselves and feel good about the plays what they have contributed to the team. But those happen to be the very same players that get down on themselves more than anybody when they don't play well. That is not a problem on this team at all. We don't have anybody pointing that over there at somebody else. They're pointing it at their own girl.
Yeah, how about that? I find that interesting. I run hot and cold on culture. When you win, you got a good culture. When you lose, you got a bad culture. I think it's more about players and individuals. Obviously, culture does matter. And here's what I mean. There was definitely a difference between Jimmy Johnson's culture and Barry Switzer's culture with the Cowboys. And it's clear that Jimmy Johnson's culture was superior to Barry Switzer's culture in Dallas. And so Mike McCarthy, I think, has established a pretty good culture in Dallas. And so I don't really think they have a culture issue. I think they have kind of a mental issue. But I think Jerry's right. If you stop the run better and run the ball better, maybe we wouldn't be having this conversation. You think?
No, I think culture matters big time, because Barry Switzer, the guys were still playing under Jimmy's culture. They just got loose under Barry. And I think his culture is something that you build. It's how your team is put together and how you can get guys to gel and play with one another no matter what, win, lose, or draw. And Jerry's talking about some football stuff. Culture is what I said, the word I always say, intangibles. What do you got inside of you?
Yeah, I think you're right on that. Like, the Baltimore Ravens have a definite culture.
Yes, sir.
I think the Pittsburgh Steelers have a definite culture.
Hell, the Jeff Fisher's Titans had a culture. They was dirty as hell.
You're right. Like, Bill Parcells' teams had culture.
The Giants that you hated, I loved them. Because the Cowboys sucked, during that time. They was not, Right. The NFC East was a monster during that time.
I think you're changing my mind as we have a deeper discussion. Like, the Buddy Ryan's teams had a culture.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, and you ain't got to like their culture, but they have a culture. Even the run and shoot Oilers had a culture.
Oh, how about Showtime with the Lakers? Pat Riley changed cultures, didn't he? He went to New York and they beat your ass.
Right, and then he went to Miami and put the same shit in place.
Yeah, there you go. I'm just saying, it just matters. What you can build, and it might be a problem with the Cowboys culture, because Jerry Jones ain't going to say it's a culture problem, because he's putting that thing together.
All right, that's fair enough.
So he ain't going to say that. He's going to talk to you. I think he trying to give you that smoke and mirrors. Hey, look at my right hand. Don't worry about what my left hand doing. Let's stop the run. Let's do this. We ain't going to worry about coaching, entitlement, and all that. I'm glad Clarence said something about entitlement. And Jerry just denied all of that.
I think you're right. Because now I'm going down a road of, you know, I always think it's better if you can really internalize. So, like, every household got a culture.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, in mine, the way I raised my kids a little differently than my mother raised me. I gave them a little more leeway, but we still had a culture where, you know, certain stuff is acceptable and then certain stuff is just completely unacceptable.
Well, me and you talked about culture. I remember one son that was kind of bad. Somebody started whooping his ass. And guess what? He grew up to be a respectable young man, didn't he?
What are you talking about?
We talked about when AJ was little.
I always whooped AJ ass. Once he got to be about three.
Not always.
Yes, I did. Right. Just because he threw a Gatorade bottle at you one day.
Oh, he acted in a plum. The stands. He acted a plum fool.
Yeah, either 3 or 4 years old. He was just acting like a fool.
Yeah.
That did, you know, sometimes.
I start tapping them hands at two.
Some of them times.
I start tapping them hands and them legs at two.
Ain't going to be throwing
no Gatorade at my boy.
I don't know what got into him that day, because he first got his hands tapped for going to the VCR, touching the record button because it was red.
Right. Well, I'm just saying. To the light. I'm just saying. We talked about that, the culture change, and that's what I'm saying about culture.
We talk about culture in terms of them time out parents. That's why you can't get your kids to do something half the time, because I counted to three. What's the big deal?
Yeah.
You know. So I mean, but there's some people who will swear by that culture. Maybe it works for them. So every household got his own culture.
Right.
Because I had a good friend of mine tell me, we were just sitting around kicking it, talking about raising kids one day. He's like, yeah, man, my son got to go at 18. I said, what you mean he got to go? He got to get up out of here once he graduate. Go to college, go to the service, but you got to go. I put in my 18 years. And I was like, damn, really? I mean, it's like that? And he was like, it was good enough for me. My mama put me out at 18. And look at me. And he's a very successful person now. But it's just a difference in culture. It's not right or wrong. It's just different. And it worked for him. And his kid is doing fine now. But, so I think you're right. I think culture matters. And
Testing, 1, 2.
How would you describe the Cowboys culture?
I don't know. You went away for about 10 seconds.
Oh.
I would describe the Cowboys culture as relaxed over there. They are, I get the feeling, you can't have a strong culture if the head coach's voice is not the one that you you really want to listen to.
And that's probably it in a nutshell right there. That's probably it right there. That man says you can't have a strong culture if the head coach's voice is not the strongest one in the building.
Yep, it's got to be. You can't go around them, you know, and stuff like that. Or you know, when Mike McCarthy is talking about cutting somebody, he ain't talking to you. Or when he talking, you know, when he dog cussing somebody, he ain't talking to you. I watched a video clip of Brian Shaw talking about the Lakers, and Phil Jackson used to cuss everybody out but Kobe.
Right.
Because he wanted Kobe in attack mode. He didn't want Kobe, you know, bothered with that stuff. And everybody understood it, and that was their culture. That was understood by Phil. Not Mr. Buss, not Genie Buss, but Phil ran that thing. And so when you got a strong culture, everybody on the team, including Shaq, he cussed Shaq out more time than he cussed Kobe out. Hmm. So when you do that, you know, that's your culture right there. Everybody understands that's how we going to do it. That's how we going to win. We all put up with that shit because we are winning. And that's how we going to do it. That guy gets his way. The rest of us kind of don't. It's okay. As long as we winning, it's all good. We start losing, you got to switch up. But, you know, it's one of them things to me is like I'm not sure if Jerry don't care about. I think Jerry don't. To me, Jerry don't care about certain things. Certain things he care about, the bottom line, and the winning. But I think he'll let a guy do what he want to do unless it, you know, like the deal with the safeties playing linebacker. Somebody right. had to sign off on that, and I think Jerry was okay with that. Dan Quinn assured him it was going to work, and when it didn't work, well, okay, now you got a problem. I'm going to let you do your job as long as it work. You know, right. that's one of the things y'all taught me about Jimmy Johnson back in the day. I thought Jimmy Johnson was a micromanager, and y'all was saying, no. He going to let you do it your way as long as it work.
Right.
I think that's Jerry. But when it don't work, you got problems. Now they talking about you in the press. Now it's problems. I think people get caught up in this Dak stuff. Not to jump back on that, but I'm going to jump back on that. Dak wasn't the problem this year. So when people say let him go or let him stay, just remember, he wasn't really the problem this year. Even when they got their ass kicked, he didn't give up four. He gave up seven.
Right.
He didn't give up 40 points. See, that whole switch up and all of that other stuff that all the coordinators did, they gave up. Dak had a pretty good year this year. So, you know, if you think you can do without that, fine. If you think this team is built for that, good luck. But I think the more we let Mike McCarthy take charge, the better the culture.
Yeah, well, he's only going to get to take charge so much. Jerry's going to run the team always.
Right. There you go. That's why that thing is like that. I mean, I don't know. How common is it for your star player to get call up somebody and say, hey, man, I ain't got no tickets. Can you give me some extra tickets? How common is that? Is that a common practice where Michael was talking about Jerry got me some tickets for my homeboys and stuff like that? And
I don't know, but I don't know that that's a big crime.
Well, if you do it for anybody, that's why I think if you do it for anybody, can Jake Ferguson call up and do the same thing?
Well, I mean, I don't think Jake Ferguson would call up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, sans. You know, I mean, so, I mean, if Pat Mahomes needed four extra tickets to the Super Bowl, he could probably ask Clark Hunt, hey, Clark, you got four extra tickets? I got some friends coming to the game.
Yeah.
But I don't think Pacheco would be like, hey, y'all got a number for Clark Hunt? I need to call him up, see if he got tickets to the game.
Okay.
Because they just ain't in that same. Like, when you were a truck driver, you could go ask your boss because of your relationship, hey, what about this? And he might be like, I won't usually do that, but all right, for you, okay. Me as a, I've been driving for 2 years, I can't go into his office and ask for the same thing.
Nah, you can't. No,
so I think it's.
I did a lot of stuff that they.
That's what I mean. Different stuff, people got different rules.
Stuff that they fired people for.
Yeah,
I did. I got paid extra for.
Matter of fact, I almost got a dude fired for that. Cause I said, oh yeah, man, I do this and this and this. You can do it too. Not realizing because I had established a certain role, I could do those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he did it. Got called and cussed out. Came out to me like, "What you tell me that for, man?" Yeah. I said, dog, I'm so sorry. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I should have known better. My bad.
Yeah, you got some. Yeah, I see that. You got some skins on the wall. You can do that.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's like Sean Payton and Russell Wilson had his own office.
Right.
Was that too far?
Yeah. Because, well, it depends on who it is. But, yeah, because you're already separate. But unequal. You don't need your own office, man. Go out there, blend with your teammates. Let your teammates know you. But, you know, they said Brett Favre did that at the end of his career in Green Bay. He spent all his time in his own office.
Did not know that.
Away from his teammates. Yeah.
Mm, okay.
So different. And, you know, one of the things that makes Dak beloved in the locker room is Dak hangs out with everybody in the locker room. Dak is now, you know, for what it's worth, obviously I covered Troy, I covered Romo, I covered Dak for a long time, each. Dak is in the locker room probably 10 times more than either of those other two quarterbacks.
So what's the deal with the locker room? You are you saying that The other two guys are like, hey, I'm done with practice. Let me shower. I'm out of here. I'll see y'all later. Or is Dak just kind of lingering in there going, what's up, yeah, man? Dak, how you doing? You want to play some spades or something? What you doing?
Yeah, Dak is just hanging. Okay. Dak is sitting. Now, he's not there every day, but a lot of days he'll just sit at his locker for a minute.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd be out there conversating with his boys.
I think that's a generational thing.
Whoever rolled through.
You know, I think that's a generational thing. I think Dak is more media savvy, or maybe he want to, you know what I'm saying?
I ain't talking about talking to the media. I'm talking about talking to his teammates.
Well, a lot of the, if you hang around the locker room, to me, I don't know, because you can tell me, it seems like the longer you hang out in the locker room, the more likely you to run into some media types. And maybe you don't want to talk to them or something.
Well,
I'm just guessing.
It really works the opposite.
Okay.
That's a normal way to think.
Right.
What happens is, if you hang out in the locker room all the time, then people get used to seeing you, so what don't they do? They don't bum rush you every time they see you.
Okay.
Because why? They see you all the time.
Got it.
When they don't see you all the time, you take one step in there, whoosh!
Here come everybody.
Right, because I don't never see you. I got to ask you this, because I never see you.
Gotcha.
When you're in there all the time, it ain't no big deal.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, when you're in there all the time, you know what you can say? Hey, not today, fellas. And they go, oh, okay. And they just walk on off by their business.
Okay.
You know, so that's the difference.
Yeah, I had to get it out of you, but that's some good shit right there.
On that note, let's take a quick trip around the block, dog.
Around the block. That is good. That's good, though, dog. I liked it.
We're going to get into some friends that I ran into yesterday, because it started a good conversation me and Big Joe were having about how we used to grow up and, you know, that whole village to raise a neighborhood thing. But first, you know, I'd like to give y'all a little dietary tip as we work on our summer bodies right now. Every Sunday, that's what we're going to do. Last week, we talked a little bit about staying in shape and how to get your summer body right. Just a little regular workout plan. Well, I got a recipe for you today. But first, I want to make sure I tell y'all this. Number one, check this out. I do not believe in diets at all. Not at all. And this is from a man. And one reason I like Sota Weight Loss. SOTAweightloss.com. Check them out if you need to lose 20, 30, 50, 100 pounds. Go to the website. Check them out. You got a theory on why I don't believe in diets, Doc?
I already know, man. I've been there with you. I watched you eat the triple and Wendy's. And we used to get greasy, dog. We used to tear that shit up. And then you start talking about diets, and then you start saying, hey, man, it's a lifestyle change.
There you go, baby.
Yeah, I act like I know your ass, because I do. And I watched the whole thing. I watched you start cooking.
I don't believe in diets, because diets are something you get on and get off. Lifestyle, you can live that thing. That's why I don't believe in eating food is nasty. I'm not trying to eat a bunch of carrot sticks and celery sticks for the rest of my life because I need to lose some weight. No. I believe in a lifestyle plan. So, like yesterday, I ran into some friends of mine. One of my boys started a barbecue food truck from Skyline, Big Greg Johnson. And so I was like, I was doing some work. I was like, oh, let me go support him. And it wasn't that far away. So I rolled over to Oak Cliff off of Illinois in Denley. And he was sold out when I got there. But I ran into some of my partners from high school. Couple of them, and then one dude I've known for 30 years who I hadn't seen in about 20. And we ended up going to this little downtown spot, the Greenhouse Pub, I think. And I had a big greasy cheeseburger and a few fries and a few nachos. And because I ain't on no diet, I was like, I ate like a pig today, but I'm finna get it right the next day. So here's my recipe for today. It's really basic. It's really easy. You can get it done in 10 minutes. Put some broccoli in a bowl, about a cup and a half. I use a little salt, just a little bit. like a pinch. It's some garlic, and I put some Parmesan. To your taste, put that in the microwave. For me, it's about 2.5 minutes. No more than that. That steams it. You can put it in there frozen. That steams it. If it's fresh, put a little water in it, and that'll steam it. Then I have a piece of salmon, about 6 ounces. Piece of chicken, about 4 ounces. Put them in the air fryer. I season mine up with Cajun seasoning. Put the salmon in there on 400 for me for 9 minutes. It was perfect. Put the chicken in there for 11. It was perfect. Cut them up. I put 4 ounces of salmon, 4 ounces of chicken on top of that broccoli. Mixed it all up. Inhaled it, my brother. It was delicious.
Sounds good.
Sounds dog, good. It's only about 350 calories. Mm-hmm. You got a bunch of protein in there with the salmon and chicken. You got great carbs with the broccoli, great fiber with the broccoli. It was fantastic. You put a little soy sauce on it if you wanted to have a little more flavor or to give it a little juice to it. But that only took about 10 minutes, real talk.
Yeah, I like broccoli. You ever ate broccoli? You ever ate broccolini?
Where do I know broccolini from? Where the lini part come from?
I don't know. I just know my wife and my daughter started cooking. It tastes like grass to me.
Yeah.
I ain't trying to eat that.
Here's some real talk for y'all. Real talk. I don't like a lot of vegetables. And this is what, you know, we were talking about culture a little while ago. I wanted my kids to eat vegetables when they were kids. And I told them, there's a bunch of vegetables in the world. Y'all get to pick two. You ain't got to eat all this other stuff you don't like. Pick two vegetables. You can have them vegetables every day. But we're going to eat some vegetables on a daily basis. Whatever ones you can suffer through, you get to pick. I don't care. One of them got to be green. The other one can be whatever color you want. And we ended up eating broccoli and spinach 99.9% of the time. So I eat broccoli almost every day because that's the only vegetable outside of spinach I really like. I mean, I may eat some green beans here and there, some asparagus here and there, but broccoli is it about 90% of the time. Spinach is about the other 9% of the time, and other is the last little bit of the time. But I call that my broccoli slamming chicken bowl. You see, real original name. It's good. It's good for you, and it don't take but a minute. Try that because you can eat just about as much meat and vegetables as you want to, and it's not a lot of calories. It fills you up and tastes good. So now that's my recipe for the week. Now let's move on to my boys, because we had a great time rehashing our childhoods. One guy was telling me about three of our friends introduced him to weed. He's like, I had never smoked, man. He was a freshman on the varsity during spring ball, and they're like, we picking you up and taking you to the dance tonight. He's like, nah, I'm going to ride with my friends. They're like, nah, bro, we got you. And he was like, I knew I was in trouble when they said they got me, man. He said, they didn't make me smoke, but they blew so much smoke in my face, it's like I had a contact high. And that's funny now. I don't recommend any kids do that to their friends these days. But back in the day, that's kind of silly stuff we did. But you were telling me, man, about... this builds into what you were saying without giving off any names. I was telling my guys, I said, damn, man, we got to get together more often, because I hadn't seen these other guys. One of them I probably hadn't seen in a couple years. The other one I hadn't seen in probably 2 or 3 years either. And then another one's a friend of mine. I probably hadn't seen him in 20 years. Matter of fact, when I saw him across a little from about 10 feet away, and I stared at him. He was staring at me smiling. And I stared again. I was like, I know this dude from somewhere. And he walked over and said, you don't remember me, do you? I said, I do, but I don't. Because I quit lying about when I remember people or not. And he said, it's me, man. And he told me his name. I said, duh, what's up? I know you. And then I rattled off all this stuff so he knew that I knew him for real. I said, man, but it's been 20 years and you done shaved your beard off. You don't even look the same. But we started talking, man. I was like, man, we got to catch up. We got to get together a little more frequently. We just can't be getting together at people's funerals. Because we are at the age, man, where either your boy's parents are dying or people that you knew are at an age where they get sick and they might pass, or they just, you know, pass suddenly. And if you're not careful, you can just be starting running into people at funerals all the time. And I was like, we got to do better than that, man. Just can't be sad occasions where we have a little fellowship and relive the good old days, you know?
Well, social media helps that, because I'm a Facebook guy, and a lot of people, a lot of my friends and family I catch up with. And then, you know, I'll pick up the phone and call them and talk them to death. And that's what I use social media for, to keep in contact with people. And then once we get together, we not strangers as much. I kind of know what's going on with them. They know what's going on with me.
Right.
But that's what I was saying about one of my brothers from the hood. His mama passed away. And I just remember her being one of the people in my village that helped raise my crazy ass, you know. When I was doing stuff, you know, maybe somebody said something to me and I cussed them out on the low. You know how kids cuss each other out? You know, and then I'd go home and my mama say, so you want to cuss people out, huh? You said this, 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 and this. And I didn't realize I was standing by such and such apartment, or that they mama heard me, but it was like, yeah, you need to watch what you say, and you better quit talking like that. If I hear about that again, da-da-da-da-da. Or you was at the swimming pool in the deep end showing your ass, huh? So, you know, it was always somebody, you know, that helped raise you. That's how we grew up. It really ain't no hoods now, especially when you raise the kids like our kids, where we play football in the street. We play basketball in the street. We did a lot of stuff by street lights. And people think, you know, if you hear that all the time, but, man, it was a whole hood. And you got better because the guys I played ball with, or basketball with, or football with, or we ran, you know, rode a bike with, built a ramp, jumped somebody, you know. Evel Knievel, that ass.
How come you can't do that no more, dog?
Kids don't play outside as much.
How come?
You got too much stuff inside. Like, either you got the video games, or those kids are on an organized team, where they being driven to practice, you know, right, where they doing stuff. I know I put up a basketball goal here because it was my son was like, maybe he was 9, and two houses down, they had a bunch of 16, 17-year-olds playing. Right. And their conversation was totally different from a 9-year-old. My wife's like, why you don't let him go play down there? Because he's going to learn about more than basketball real fast. Yep. And that boy playing with action figures right now. I want him to be young. You know, but I don't want to learn, you know, about dope and girls and all of that other stuff. And then I put a goal up at my house. And if you didn't want to pull your damn pants up, your ass got to keep walking.
Right, right.
You can't bust a sag over here and all that and start cussing and all that. And you want to play over here, your ass going to keep walking. I think I embarrassed my son a couple times. Hey, tell your friend pull up his pants or his ass got to go. Homeboy, once they be like, all right, they'll take a couple more shots, take their ass on. That's just the rules around here.
Right, right.
So a lot of times I played with them too. But it's kind of different than when we grew up, because it's just not a, it's more of an organized, I think it's more of an organized thing. I took them to more practices than they got to play with their friends and stuff. Plus we got communities with community pools. I have a community pool here instead of a public pool.
Right.
Where you went to swim and all of that. So it's a lot different.
Yeah, I think I was glad that I think some of it is, at least to me, the world's a lot more dangerous now. Like when I was a kid, I literally don't believe my mother worried about when I was playing football in the street with my friend Mark. We used to play we used to be on this. We used to have, he was a quarterback, I'd be the receiver. And we play against imaginary teams.
Been there, done that. Yes, sir.
And so it was just the two of us. But she never worried about somebody kidnapping me and snatching me while I was out there playing. I don't know if it's social media made us more aware, but you can't even relax when your kid's outside playing because you don't know what fool, what pervert. Especially because mine had a park literally across the street. You know, I just got to watch you because I can't trust society right now. And so I think that's part of it. But the good thing for me is my son, was fortunate enough to have about three or four cousins his age. And then Calvin Watkins' sons were his age, one a year younger, one a year older. And so between all of that, he always had people at the house, and they was always outside playing basketball, playing football, because I was fortunate enough to have a big backyard. And then they go inside and play video games, and then they kind of repeat that cycle. So he was always an outside player trying to do something. Matter of fact, yeah. I showed him an old Facebook picture the other day because I saw this somewhere, man. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to make you a basketball court. I took some electrical tape or something and measured it off and made a free throw line and put his little name and his initials on the side. And I showed him a picture from Facebook the other day. He was like, that was a great court, Dad. And I was like, man, that was as basic as it come, but I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. Yeah, we had kids over here. Birthday parties and all that. I used to police the hell out of them birthday parties because them kids try to get a doggone hot dog and don't eat it. Or they try to get a soda and don't eat it. Yeah, I remember giving the kids some two hot dogs and some chips. He took one bite out of the hot dog and started walking toward the trash can. I was like, oh, hell no. Where you going? Tell you what, when you leave, this going with you. I took me some saran wrap, wrapped it up. I said, you got a soda? All right, what'd you do with the last one you had? Put that back in the cooler. See what I'm saying? Because y'all not finna play up in here. And then the ones that was the baddest, whether they playing basketball or a birthday party, oh, no, you going home first. It's time to go. Call your mama. Oh, I got to call my mama, and they don't, because you got to go. You got to go. I can't. If you ain't signed no waiver for me to whoop their ass, I can't have no badass kids over here. You want to act a fool? You got to go. You know, I had two boys that crashed my daughter's party, my swim party. I had to give my daughter a swim party at the community pool at 10 years old. Two boys was hanging out, and I saw what they was up to. My wife said, are you going to get them? I said, I'm going to talk to them. She thought, man, she just knew I was finna roust them boys. I said, hey, I noticed y'all boys singing happy birthday. Whose party is it? They said, it's her party. I said, who is her? I said, her name is Brand. Listen, fellas, y'all enjoy the cake. Y'all enjoy the pop and the hot dogs and all that. But next time you crash a party, make sure you learn a person name. How about that? Okay. All right, then. Y'all enjoy. It's plenty. And she couldn't believe what I'm going to do. Slap the hot dogs out their hand or something? No, I just want to let you know. Hey, fellas, they were some good kids. They were just trying to sneak in, which they got in, but I caught them, so. I don't know. But
you feel like that sometimes.
Oh, man. Yeah. I love kids, man. I could tell you a million stories about kids, man. Especially this neighborhood been pretty good. It's a good time, man. It's a good thing. It's a good thing to catch up with people. And when I heard my friend's mom died, it just made me sad because, like I said, she was one of the people that made my life a good life and kept me straight.
Right.
If you don't mind, I just want to say rest in peace, Shirley Faye Cunningham. You will be missed by all.
Now, I just saw something on ESPN. Well, we're going to have a little Mavericks talk, but we're going to talk about this for a couple seconds before we get out of here. Award-winning ESPN NFL reporter Chris Mortensen just passed away today.
Oh, man.
At 72, his family announced on IG today. And Mort, remember when we were talking about Peter King last year and what how he helped me? Mort was the exact same way. When I met him in the mid-90s, he was one of the superstars of the business. And I used to talk to him all the time when he came through Dallas, which was quite often. Just about, hey, what I got to do to be a good reporter, man? What I got to do this? What can I do to do that? And I talked to Mort probably about 2 years ago. I was working on a piece on Deion, and I called Mort to get a feel for what the Falcons thought about him before they drafted him and if they seriously considered somebody else. And he got back to me, man. And I tell you, I said, hey, I know you got a lot going on. Let me get you for about 10 minutes. He said, for you, Jacques, I got as much time as you need. And he kept me on the phone for about 30, 35 minutes. And he was fantastic. And it just reminded me again at that particular time what a great dude and what a great guy he is. And all those people, man, whether it's Mort, whether it's Peter King, they all influenced me to when people contact me and say, hey, the young reporters, hey, you know, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? I always make time for them, man, because those cats made time for me when they didn't have to. And it's really the least I can do to kind of pay it forward the way they paid it forward with me. But Chris Mortensen, diagnosed with throat cancer about 6 years ago, dead at 72. And I got to tell you, bruh, 72 don't seem so old.
No, it don't.
It used to seem old.
But on that note, I want to say this. If you asking somebody, you got to, first of all, you got to humble yourself to ask somebody for help or ask somebody advice, and especially when you mean it. You know,
yeah.
People going to help you.
Yeah.
You know, I've tried to train 100 drivers since I drove, and you could tell who was listening and who wasn't.
Right.
And, you know, you end up being, you train a guy in that little 10x8 truck, and you, especially if you're going 2,600, 3,000 miles. If you're older, you end up being a counselor for just about everything.
Yes, sir.
You know, hell, I saved my own marriage, saved their marriage, you know, saved some kids, you know. And I've had guys say, man, I remember you told me about it. Well, the only reason I can tell you about that is because I've screwed that up and I survived that. And this is how I did it. And this is, you know, I'm not going to tell you nothing that I think, but yeah, when people are humble and they ask you, especially if you're asking me, I'm not butting in, you know. Yeah, 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 yeah. I think that's probably why them guys was like, oh, this guy really asking me, and he mean it, so let me take care of him. Now, I'm sure not everybody was like that, but, yeah.
I'm trying to think. Most people were, though.
Yeah, well, if you're sincere, it's all good.
Yeah, I really don't remember anybody who, like, blew me off and, like, get away from the kid. I really don't. Maybe it happened, but I don't remember it. From a journalistic standpoint.
When you good at what you do, you don't mind. When you confident in yourself and you good at what you do, you don't mind sharing them secrets. You don't mind teaching somebody how to be called, because you ain't finna get me. I ain't worried about that. I only got mine. I'm good at what I do. So what you want to do? What you want to learn? How you want to do this?
Yep. And, you know, people can give you tips till they blue in the face, as Mama used to say. You're still upon the individual to execute.
Oh, yeah.
And show a desire to do whatever is required to be successful. So, you know, I'm reminded of a story. One of the guys I mentor was covering the Vikings. And he was like, hey, man, Mike Zimmer's supposed to come in town. I want to get him. How do I go about getting him? I was like, hey, you know where the team puts up its players and people who come into town? He's like, yeah. I said, all right, well, hell, that's half the battle. Go to the hotel and wait. He said, how long do I wait? I said, till he walked through the door. He said, but I don't know what time he's getting there. I said, well, get over there now. Then you won't miss him. He said, yeah, because he's coming in late tonight. I said, find you a seat that faces the lobby, because he ain't going to be expecting nobody to be waiting late at night. I said, and after you get there, as soon as you get there, grab whatever snacks or reading material you need so that you don't have to leave, because, you know, fate will have it. As soon as you go to the bathroom, that's when he'll walk in. I said, just wait. I said, what if he don't come till 1? I said, I guess you'll be waiting till 1. He said, what should I ask him? I said, it don't matter, dog. If you're the only one there, whatever he says is news. So ask him what he thinks his chances are for the job. Whatever he says, even if he says, hey, I have no comment on that, I'm just going to go in here and go to sleep. That's a quote, because that means he's in town to interview for the job. He's like, oh, okay, yeah. Why that dude call me, man, 1:30 in the morning? I just got him, man. I said, okay, dog, I'm happy for you. Call me back in the morning and tell me what he said.
Roger that.
So he said, I'm sorry. I said, okay, man, it's all good. I hung up on him. He called me in the morning. I said, what'd he say? He said, just what you said. I can't comment. I hope I get an opportunity to coach the Vikings. I said, that's all you needed. He said, yeah, man, the office was really happy. I said, dog, I told you that's what was required. But you did it, man. Everybody else didn't do it, so you get all the rewards. But that's an example of a kid that wanted it. And now he's one of the baddest dudes on the planet.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I ain't surprised because he was like that from the jump. But Chris Mortensen, dead at 72. Great memories. Great dude.
That's two legends, John Clayton and him. I didn't know about John Clayton either.
Yeah, he died about 3 years ago. Yeah, so I did not very know that. Suddenly.
No wonder so, we yeah. didn't see the professor.
Yeah, so, but, you know, we always appreciate Green and Law. Can't do the podcast without them. Same goes for my friends at Smokey John's Barbecue, home of the Jam Session Bowl. Big Joe finally tasted it. It was well worth the wait. Don't forget, you can always pick up the book, Coach Prime, Deion Sanders and the Making of Men, at Walmart.com, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, wherever you get your books. I spent the 2022 season in Jackson, Mississippi, hanging out with Deion Sanders. Everything you want to know about him as a coach and why he'll be successful at Colorado, you can find out in this book. And don't forget, please do us a favor. Go to YouTube. Go to The Real Jacques Talk. Subscribe, like, and leave a comment about the show. We need it. And we appreciate it. You can find us on IG at The Real Jacques Talk. And you can hit me on Twitter at JJT Journalist. I am Jean-Jacques Taylor is the handle. Until we chat again, you guys be blessed.